Hi, this is Mark Iverson, owner and founder of Ida History, a Boise area small business devoted to historical tours and content. And lately, I've had a question based on a term that I've heard thrown around the political arena in the news perhaps too often, and that is real Americans and the real America. To me, America is a place full of diversity in thought, religious belief, culture, history, and political views. To claim that you are a real American and you comprise a real America is to say you possess something, possess a nation built on how you are and what you perceive to be right. And of course, to me, that is relative to who you are and where you come from. And so I wanted to talk to Americans, great many Americans, Americans from all walks of life, all colors, sexual orientations, genders, religions, and etc., and see what they think a real American is, or if there is a real American. And I want to get their experiences down in conversations recorded, because when you get a person's experience, you understand them a little bit more. And thus, you empathize with their situation and their reality in America. And so, join me. This is the Ida History Conversations Podcast. Thanks to the Trendy Dads for that great piece of music. It's a cover of the B-52's Private Idaho. And it's the perfect opening.
We are again for another edition of Ida History Conversations. And yes, I found this person that we're going to talk to today, or I'm going to talk to today, on Instagram. But then I'm back at the Lit Room doing an interview / conversation. And I got to know the Naked Neighbor through my friend Chelsea Major, the owner of the Lit Room. And it's really been a great place for me to just experience creative individuals that I think are empowering and have something to say. And so, Megan, would you introduce yourself to my listeners and talk about what it is that you do, your art or
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah, of course. My name is Megan. I'm an Idaho native. I was born in St. Luke's downtown.
Right.
I think the doctor who delivered me still works there, which is crazy.
Oh, shit.
I mean, maybe not now.
All the way back in 92, you
back
said?
Back in 92.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I am an artist, a visual artist. I primarily paint people and the female form. I like to explore the juxtaposition of man versus nature, masculine versus feminine, and hard versus soft. I'm also really into clothing. I recently started a little merch business as well as a merch co-op, which helps empower other artists, whether they're visual, musical, whatever it may be, and even small businesses around the, you know, greater Boise area to help them produce merchandise at a, I guess the entry cost isn't so high. So they're able to put in as much or as little as they need to create merch, and then that helps sustain their passion and their living.
Right. We've talked about that for my business.
Yeah.
In fact, and it was, you know, when you're looking for creative merch that you can't just get online easily and you want some localized artist to do some really creative shit, man, I mean, that's exactly what you want.
Like, yes.
You need a place to go find. That's kind of what the Lit Room is in
exactly.
a sense, but it'll be more so.
Well, and it's like Chelsea and the Lit Room is actually one of my clients for the business. But beyond that, they've let me use their space after hours to actually have like members of my co-op come in and make their merch. So,
okay.
Yeah. So this space is so great for that, for like collaborating. I'm also going to be moving into a space this week called Folks.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, it's right next to Good Time Bagels off of Main Street.
Okay.
And they're also like a creative space. So right now I think we have four women. It's a woman owned, like queer business, which is so super rad.
I love that.
Yeah. And I'm moving in there, so I'm newer, but the two, owners, Danny and Whitney, they work full-time jobs on top of like this passion project that they have. So, I'm going to be in there regularly during the week, and it's going to act as basically my art studio and my Boise base, which is great because I live on a farm in Meridian.
Right, you're a farm girl.
I'm a farm girl. I live on a farm in Meridian, but that's kind of all I do in Meridian these days is live on a farm, and everything else, my whole life, my whole community, it's here in Boise.
So. Right. But isn't it true though, for a while, maybe it'll continue, but you've created a lot of your art in your studio that's on the farm?
Yes. Yes. So I have a tiny home. It's a shed. I actually bought it almost 2 years to the date, 2 years ago. And I converted it into a tiny home with my dad. I have some health issues, so I actually had a seizure 2 years ago on the 23rd of April. Okay. Yeah, it was kind of rocked me to my core. It's completely burnt out. I've never had a seizure before. I've had lots of health issues, but this one was really scary. Both my brothers were with me though, so I feel very thankful for
good.
That.
Good.
Unfortunately, I feel like the healthcare system here in Idaho has failed me.
No shit.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a kind of an issue, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And so I'm still seeking answers. I don't know why it happened. I have theories, but that's a different podcast. Right. And it's funny because one of the first things they do is they give you like a full drug panel because seizures can be induced by drugs.
Okay.
And my drug panel was completely clear, and I still feel like they completely dismissed me, and it really sucked. But anyways, so what? I had to move back in. I was already really sick prior to this seizure. I was packing up and moving when I had it because I was moving back to the farm in Meridian because I couldn't take care of myself anymore. And then I had a seizure. So I had talked to my parents about buying a shed and converting it into a tiny home so I could still have my own space.
Okay.
I did that with my dad. I had to take some time off work. I couldn't drive. I was kind of stuck. I couldn't do a lot of things. So my dad helped me convert this shed into a home and into a studio, and
that's incredible. Because through your art, what I saw, you know, I met you from buying a shirt at a special event in Meridian.
Yeah.
And I love the shirt. People love the shirt. It's polyester. It's hot in the summer, but it's best in the summer.
Yeah, it's from the 70s, and it has right. One of those long collars.
Oh, I love it.
It's so good.
But so that's how I met you. And the first things I would, adjectives I would apply to you are, vibrant and healthy. So you must have been doing something right in the last couple of years to it as far as improve your health. I mean,
yeah, I think part of that is like, I've gotten to the point where I've quit all jobs that I hate. I'm not really adhering to, I've decided that I'm not going to kill myself or make myself sick simply to make a paycheck. And
right.
That's what capitalism is, and that's kind of where we are currently. And paying rent in a city where rent keeps skyrocketing and
right. Wages
don't match the cost of living.
It's happening everywhere.
It's hard. So it's like living out in Meridian and on my parents' property, it allows me to prioritize my health
yes.
and my art rather than prioritizing making money.
Yeah, and I mean, you can see that. I haven't ever seen anything quite like your art, and I think that's the best compliment, right?
You can pay, for sure.
But it's very genuine. And what I like about it, and yeah, I'm going to be the middle-aged dad that says this shit, but it's true. Having a daughter, you know, I wasn't some sexist prick that I, like, actively tried to be sexist before. But I'm sure, like, any dude that's 40-something, you know, I'm sure I have my implicit biases. You know, education goes a long way, but having a daughter, that'll make you think. And I like the body positive image that your art displays, because we were just talking about how a lot of what women see to live up to as young women, it's not healthy.
No.
It's not good for women. And what a lot of men, you made a good point earlier too when we were talking that, that you know, men also see that, and they have a certain idea or uneven solicited expectation of what a woman is supposed to be in America, everywhere, but it, you know, we're talking in an American context. That's very, your art is very intentional to display like real body types, celebrate the female form, and female identity. I guess to take this to history, what do you think, or some of the tropes that American society or civilization, you know, across America, what do you think are some of the damaging stereotypes that impacted you or women that you know?
Yeah, so I think weight and body image is a huge one. I mean, look at here's a good example in history that everyone will know: Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
Gorgeous, beautiful, intelligent,
very intelligent,
funny,
right,
talented. But what do people think of when they think of her?
Yeah.
They think of her body. They think of, like, she's like this sexy blonde bombshell. And I know that I experience a lot of that just because of what my body looks like. And this is what my body looks like. I got curves. I've got big boobs and a big butt. And even if I'm at my smallest, those things still exist, and they're still there, and they're still bigger than, like, the quote unquote beauty standard, which I'm happy to see that the beauty standard is changing. But, you know, when you had women like Audrey Hepburn,
right,
that was like the ideal beauty. She was a ballerina. She was stick thin. And I'm not saying that one is better than the other. I'm not saying that at all. But when I know that something that I see super, super regularly here in terms of like what I look like is that people assume that I'm promiscuous.
Okay.
Simply based off of what my body looks like. And I carried so much shame even when I was younger. I mean, I didn't tell anybody that I was like when I had my period, I was so ashamed of being a woman and having a body. And now I'm to the point where I'll tell people, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm on my period. And they're like, and there are still people who are like, oh my God, I don't want to hear that. That's too much information. I go, that is reality. It happens every single day. Women around the world are having periods.
Right.
And you are alive because a woman had a period, my guy. Like, relax.
Period on that sentence.
Period,
right?
On that's that what sentence. It is. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like, it's crazy to me that, like, you know, I dated a man and he told me that I should eat more healthy. And I look at him, and I'm vegetarian, I eat gluten-free, I barely drink alcohol, like all of these things. And I look at him and I'm like, you eat pizza for dinner every single night. I'm like, what do you mean? I was like, just because, like, I was like, I have some health issues and, like, my body is naturally just, like, a little bit bigger.
What did he say to that, though?
He's a man.
I am too, though.
What do you mean? I mean, there's so many, like, I don't know. It's just, I feel like there's a lot of, like, double standards. Like, dad bods are hot, but it's like...
Really?
Yeah. I haven't heard that. Like, dad bods are, like, hot. Like, oh, I love a man with a dad bod. But it's like, mom bods are hot, too. All bodies are hot. Like, and I think to assume anything about anyone based off of what they look like...
Right.
In any way, shape, or form is wrong.
I agree.
And so, I can give another example. When I lived in Salt Lake, I lived in Salt Lake a few years. Yeah. And I like lived in Salt Lake, the heart of Salt Lake there for a while.
Are you talking about the Tabernacle? Like, I'm not a Mormon person myself, you know, LDS
actually,
stuff.
Yeah, like, so any iconic, like, do you know Twilight Lounge?
No.
Okay, never mind. I feel like you would, like, if you knew Twilight Lounge, I feel like if you were somebody who lived in Salt Lake, that's where you'd hang out.
I've actually befriended and become quite good friends with, as much as you can on Instagram, with a lesbian woman that lives in Salt Lake and sends, you know, she does... posts about, you know, gay bars in Salt mm-hmm. Lake. And, you know, me being me, my stereotypes and not understanding, I was like, no shit. Like, that exists in Salt Lake? Mm-hmm. Just like, there's is there a beer above 3.5%?
There is a huge counterculture in Salt Lake, which is very interesting. But when I was dating there, I would get a lot of guys who were Mormon.
Uh-huh.
Or they were like, oh, I'm not Mormon anymore. And I was like, well, it says you're Mormon on your profile. You look the type.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, no, like, I'm not Mormon anymore. And I go, okay, why are you hanging out with me?
Okay.
Because, and the reason being, they were literally hanging out with me because they could look at me and be like, there's no way in hell
mm-hmm.
that anybody I know from my church, my ward, or anything would know who this girl is.
Okay, they
does
just
that
imagine.
Make sense? Like, yes, the way that she dresses, she's covered in tattoos. This girl is not Mormon. No one will know who she's also. No one will know who she is.
Right.
So I can do whatever I want with her and still go back and marry a Mormon girl.
No shit.
And that happened all the time.
Oh,
and
so you must be promiscuous.
All
promiscuous.
The time. I must be promiscuous based off of what I look like.
Okay.
Based off of the tattoos, based off of the curves, based off of everything. And they were very disappointed when I'd be like, okay, bye.
Right.
I was like, I'm literally not interested in this
and
at all.
And here's your education.
And then it'd be so funny because they'd be like, oh, should we go inside? And I'd be like, no. And then I'd never hear from them again.
Okay, how much of that do you think, okay, like one thing I've, in the Mormon church, one of the problems that I've heard about, you know, and I'm not, I don't want to paint with too general brush, but, and this is not just true in Mormonism, like you can talk about major, like different monotheism.
I grew up Catholic and that had a huge impact on like my body image and everything, because you were told that you were supposed to be modest. And even now it's like, I'm not Catholic anymore, like at all, but I would get like, oh, Megan, your shorts are a little short.
Right. Right. But I think a lot of that comes from male entitlement.
Oh my God.
Because in those religions and like many patriarchies, like I study patriarchy, we were talking about, like, the men are catered to. They're on the platform as, like, you know, what do you call it, the priest holders or something in Mormonism? I don't know. You know, it's like, you're expected, women can't really be too involved in the upper leadership of the church.
Yeah.
And so you have these men that just, and then they get out of it and they still carry that with them.
Yeah.
This idea that, oh, like, look at it, he's like, oh, you're going to cater to him. You know, like, dude, you're not that special, bro.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think? Like, you're going to go out and just automatically, like, hit on a woman and it's going to happen like that?
Yeah.
You got to suffer like the rest of us, pal.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I think, like, a lot of people, because I am so, like, body positive and, like, the kind of art I make and, like, even I'm the naked neighbor. Like, I paint in my underwear. It's a part of my brand. I'm, like, in my underwear a lot on my Instagram. But that doesn't mean that I'm, like, that doesn't mean I'm easy. It doesn't mean I'm promiscuous. It doesn't mean, like, none of that they are not connected. They're not mutually exclusive.
Right.
Like, just because I present myself like a Instagram baddie or whatever, doesn't mean that I don't want a lasting, committed relationship. Like, I don't want to just, like...
Maybe it's the reverse, though. Maybe men wear tight shit. And they want chicks to check them out, and that's what they're thinking.
Maybe,
yeah, but for women, it's not necessarily.
No, and it's like I mean, if I was dressing to attract a man,
right?
I would not be wearing what I'm wearing. Like, especially here in Idaho. Right, no one, I mean, tons of people compliment me on my outfits like every single day, but I don't think anybody's being like, oh my God, that Megan girl is not wearing a bra because she wants it. I'm not wearing a bra because bras are uncomfortable and it's hot.
Right. You got the snare. I mean, my wife has talked about that too. She's like, why the hell do I got to wear a bra right now? You know, like, it's hot. It's uncomfortable. This thing's biting into my shoulder. Yeah. I'm like, why are you?
I had a really good guy friend a couple years ago. We're not friends anymore. Uh-oh. But he had told me, he's like, hey, Megan, I want to talk to you about something. I was like, yeah, what's up? And he's like, I think maybe you should like wear a bra because I think it makes people uncomfortable. And I go, does it make you uncomfortable? And he goes, no, I don't care. And I go, okay, so does it make your girlfriend uncomfortable that I don't wear a bra? He goes, yeah. And I go, that's not my problem. That sounds like something you and your girlfriend need to work through, because if she's upset about you hanging out with a girl who's not wearing a... I'm wearing a shirt. You can't see my nipples through it. Like, I'm wearing clothes.
Be that the protrusion?
It's not like I'm hanging out with you completely topless. Then she can be concerned. But that's not what's happening here, and that's crazy.
I love how boobs change in people's perspective. It's like, you sit there and you're like, you're all about the boob for, like, your youth, you know, obviously when you're a child. And then all of a sudden it becomes something to be afraid of.
Or, like, they're...
The boob.
Well, and it just... It sucks, because, like, I have big boobs. Like, and I'm not...
Right.
You look at me and you can tell. It's not like I'm not hiding it.
I've noticed.
But, yeah, exactly. Everyone's noticed. Like, and it's...
Well, you've joked about it, too.
Well, yeah, like, and I also... And here's the thing, again, going back to, like, Marilyn Monroe, you know, people automatically think of, like, oh, my God, she's so beautiful, she's so voluptuous, all that things. I get people... I get similar comments. People are like, oh my God, you have such a beautiful body, Megan. Like, oh my God, your ass is insane. And I go, I'm also really smart and talented, and I'm very kind.
Well, yeah.
And I say that to people because I'm like, I don't want to just be one thing. And, you know, I'm also a redhead. So my entire life, every compliment I think I've ever gotten has been tied up into my appearance. Uh-huh. And I've had to fight really, really, really hard to be taken seriously outside of what I look like.
Well, I think you're succeeding because...
I'm trying.
I mean, I think, like, it was your art. But, yeah. I mean, it's tied up in your appearance.
Yeah.
And, but that's interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, like, but my art is that's me. It's me on a canvas. That's my heart. That's my soul. That's everything. I realized recently that I'm not very good at communicating words-wise. Like, I'm not good at telling people what I need or what I want or how I feel. And I'm really, really, really trying to work on that.
Right.
But I've always been like, but look at my art. If you're wondering about what I'm going through or how I'm feeling, look at my art. But not everybody thinks like that. Like, that's me.
Right.
So I can listen to a song or I can look at a piece of art and... be like, are you okay?
But I see artists, though, I see a lot of correlation or similarities between artists and, I want to say, good historians. You know, good historians are trying to push the envelope. They're trying to find new things, new sources of information, mm-hmm. to tell a different story, either of something that's been done but not looked at in a certain way.
Yeah.
Or they're looking at something that's never been really analyzed before. I see artists grappling with themes, too. They're taking 100%. Their sources, their life. And in fact, art is it's great primary source material for historians because it represents what a person is dealing with that time, that place often.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but you know what I mean? And so I love artists. Even if I don't even like their art, I like what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And succeeding in other people's
lives. Exactly. You know what I mean? And I with my art specifically is I'm trying to make art accessible and for everyone. Mm-hmm. And with that being said is I want, if you want to just look at something beautiful, if you just want to look at something, cool. My art's for you. If you want to find the deeper meaning, you bet your ass you can find it.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk to you.
Yeah. So it's like I make art that visually it's beautiful. It's not crazy complicated, but if you wait and you give it some time, you can see it. And I've had people like break down before looking at my art, and people are like, I don't get it. And I go, no, but they did. And that's okay.
Right.
And that's okay that you didn't, because I made it accessible.
Right.
Because there's a lot of people who make art and they're like, I'm trying to shock people, or I'm making art based off of this thing that happened. And I go, but that has nothing to do with you, and that's not your story to tell. So what are you even doing?
Yeah, I see a strength in it.
Yeah. So it's like I'm sharing things that I've, you know, gone through, but I'm sharing it in a way that it's digestible. And if people want to ask about it, they can. Like I did a series called Life is Beautiful a few years ago. And the little tagline for it was finding beauty in the bullshit.
Right.
Or seeing the beauty through the bullshit. And it was basically things that I'd gone through within like the last 5 to 10 years, and like kind of the heartbreak. But I made these really beautiful paintings. Mm-hmm. Really beautiful paintings. And it's like one of them's about being diagnosed with Hashimoto's. You would never know by looking at it.
Okay, Hashimoto's. Okay, I've heard of that.
Hashimoto's is an autoimmune disease that attacks your thyroid.
Okay, yeah, that's right. They thought my father-in-law had thyroid issues.
And thyroid issues are really, really common. But Hashimoto's specifically is, it's kind of hard to put your finger on, because you'll be exhibiting symptoms of being like hyperthyroid, uh-huh. which means like an overactive thyroid.
Right.
But your levels will show an underactive thyroid, and then vice versa. So my levels always come back as if I have an overactive thyroid. But then you look at me and you go, there's no way that girl has an overactive thyroid.
Right.
But it sucks, because I'm like, you know, I'm in my 30s, and it affects your hormones. It affects everything in your body.
And so that comes through in your art too. Yeah. People probably wouldn't know that.
No, and it's like I'm trying to, you know, I love art, and it's literally like it's been like the one constant in my life. And I'm really lucky that I had such a beautiful, amazing, wonderful family who,
yes, it sounds like,
encouraged it. And I know that not everybody has like a great home life. I do, which is why I'm okay with being in my 30s and technically living at my parents.
Yeah, but you have like you said, you have a very active life.
I do. I have a very active Boise, life. In Boise,
outside of Meridian.
Exactly. But I really do love my family, and I feel so very lucky. And I can kind of tie this all back into like Idaho history. My dad's from Idaho. My parents met in Seattle. My dad's like deeply Idahoan, farms in Fruitland and Meridian all over the place. The farms in Fruitland are still there. The farms in Meridian are gone.
Right.
Well,
that's sad to me.
Yeah, I had a great, 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 great grandpa who was a sheriff of Star back in the day.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like it's really cool, because my grandma was really into genealogy, and she died a few years ago. So now we have all of her boxes and boxes and boxes of like pictures and birth certificates and all these things. And so my dad's slowly but surely digitizing all of them.
Oh, no shit. I got to see that.
Yeah, stuff. That's what I'm saying. You would love Paul. Paul is the best.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And Paul is one of the good ones. And that's why I always say, I was like, Dad, you're such a good man, and that's why I can't find one.
But it's probably because he has a daughter he loves, obviously. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it changes you.
And I mean, like, my dad is, so on our farm, we used to grow, like, organic vegetables. My dad was the president of the Idaho Organic Cooperative.
Oh, no kidding.
We sold veggies at the co-op. We sold at the Nampa Farmers Market, and then we had counterparts who sold at the Boise Farmers Market. And if you were a part of the cooperative,
right?
If anybody was short on like lettuce or beets, like you would like trade. And that's like, I think that upbringing too, of like the whole cooperative,
right,
and collective mentality has really like, that's been instilled in me. And
bunch of goddamn communists, man, too.
It's so funny because it's a bunch of farmers. Right, and, like, that's where I got my start in, like, this, like, community and collectivity and almost, like, you know, a collective structure of approaching any sort of like business or things. And I'm a lot happier doing that versus working for the man.
I love it. Yeah, I love, we equate wealth, you know, like not just wealth, like as much wealth as we can acquire. I don't think it leads to happiness.
No, I don't think so either. And it's like when I started prioritizing my happiness over making money, guess what? I'm happy.
Right.
Do I have a lot of money? No. Do I have enough? Yes.
I love, like, I have a rich life in the sense that I've met people that are interesting and intriguing, but it's because I haven't maximized to the extent I guess some people in a capitalist society mm-hmm. do. I mean, and I'm not saying there's, I'm talking about uncheckered capitalism. That's yeah. something that's wrong, but I make a dollar on my tours, but I'm not trying to play into, I'm not trying to push things that I know will be a certain way to draw in a crowd for yeah. an easy dollar. I'm trying to do really good history and meet interesting people that I think have a lot to offer
yeah.
that can actually like add to a vibrant culture in this
yeah.
area. Because it's also good for me. It's rewarding.
Exactly.
And everybody I've met through the Lit Room and yeah, on fucking Instagram. It's weird. I never thought in a million years I'd do Instagram. But because I've met
but it's a community.
Right.
Yeah.
And I really am better for the people that I've gotten to meet because I expand my knowledge, you know, talking to Chelsea here about what she's reading, talking to you and looking at your art, you know, learning about, you know, like I told my friend Natalie from Hello Meridian when she came on my tour, I was like, I stereotyped her as a blonde. Mm-hmm. You know, she jokes about her boobs.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, I just stereotyped her as, okay, a Meridian person that talks about shopping and shit like that. She's not like that
no,
at all.
No, she's...
Right,
she's,
you know her, right?
I know of her. We haven't, like, connected personally. Oh, but she's such a... What I love so much about her, I feel like she's using her power for good.
Oh, she is. And she doesn't have to.
And she doesn't have to. And that's the thing is like seeing so many people like who do have like these big Instagram presences and who are like quote unquote influencers or whatever. There's so many of them who aren't using their power for good.
And she is.
And she is. And it's cool because she actually speaks out about things and she lets her opinion be known even if.
She could have over 100,000 followers.
She could.
If she wanted to. And you know, the other thing is if she likes your business and what you're doing, she's totally supportive. And
you don't have to pay her. And there's there's a lot of people that you have to pay them to come and do your things at their events. And I don't know. It's
right. I mean, in large part, I'm doing this because she does what she does.
Yeah.
And we've had these conversations and I'm like,
She's the Boise Bubble, right?
Right, the yeah. Boise Bubble. And I love,
and
her husband's
her
a good
husband.
Buddy of mine,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, she's had my friend on her podcast a few times. He's Amos Rothstein. He's he does a food review.
Oh,
a
yeah,
food
yeah,
review
yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Boise Weekly.
That's right. I know who you're talking about. Yeah. I listen to their stuff like that usually has to do with like politics or yeah. history, but I should give the other stuff a try. But
and I think he's on one of their political podcasts because he was actually the head of the Republican Party here in Boise.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Didn't they talk to him about being a...
And he's queer.
Yeah. Gay Republican.
Something like that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Wasn't it? It was like, you know, and I... Yeah,
well,
I mean, that's what they're doing. It's like,
well,
you know.
And he's now gone, like, you know, things started to get really, and I don't want to speak for him by any
no,
means,
sure.
but things got really dicey there for a while, and he was getting attacked, but he wasn't doing anything wrong. And
I mean, he was starting to get attacked by Republican people, and, you know, and he had even, and it's so, what's so sad to me is that, you know, I think, and I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat either, and it doesn't...
There's a lot of bullshit in both.
There's a lot of bullshit in both, for sure. And that's where I'm trying to steer away, because I'm like, here's the thing. I don't like the two-party system doesn't work.
Right.
And, like, there's a lot of things that don't work about how things are currently going, and that's saying it very nicely. But you know, I think that the Republican Party definitely ostracized and left behind this younger generation of people who want to make a difference, but who also kind of fall in line with the Republican politics.
Right, right. They have. And they have.
They sure. have. And but I think like the Democratic Party's following suit and doing the exact same thing.
What I've talked with my buddy about, my buddy in San Fran, we went to LA together and we have these great conversations, but we were both talking about how, you know, I think the Republican Party has totally fractured, but in this, and we all know that, but you got the wonky fuckers taking over. You know, sorry, if you're a Margie Taylor Greene fan, you probably chose the wrong fucking
podcast. I was like, you probably are listening to this podcast.
Right, yes. But, you know, I mean, there's a guy.
Not interested in history and
oh, yeah. No, right.
You're probably not here, so it doesn't even matter.
But I think his name is John Kasich a long time ago. Like, he was a guy that really spoke to me, you know, though I was always like, you know, fiscal politics, you know, goes right into social politics and social yeah. issues. But, you know, I mean, I liked what he said. I liked how he cared about people, and he just disagreed on how to best implement the help that people needed. But he understood that homelessness is a problem, and those people need help with
people
compassion.
People first politics.
Right, right, right.
And it hasn't been like that in a long time.
No, it hasn't. And, you know, we can go over that all day, but one thing I do think that we need more seats at the table, you know, for women, other minorities, you know, we need more diversity in our leadership. And so, you know, one thing in a predominantly white state led by men, white men.
Yeah.
How did you form this identity? What hurdles were in your way? You know, I love that you come from a farm in Meridian, Idaho, and I'm full of stereotypes, not just about Natalie of Ella Meridian.
Yeah.
Wonderful person, Natalie. You know, I love you. Shane, you too, buddy. But, you know, the other thing is, like, if you said, I'm from a farm in Meridian, my brothers and my father are farmers, maybe your mom too, I don't know.
Well, actually, it's funny because it's a small family farm, but my dad actually works at Micron.
Oh, no shit.
My dad is like a software engineer.
So he's a Micron software engineer, organic farmer.
Yep.
Oh.
He got sick when I was like 15 and we stopped doing the farm. But he's gearing up to retire here in the next couple years and we're going to be bringing the organic farm back.
No kidding. Yeah. Oh, man, I want to do some stuff about that.
Well, and that's the thing is, I think, well, we have 5 acres, so it's small, but we want our friends and family to like be involved in it. So if that means we have garden beds that certain people have, like that's their bed, or, you know, if you want to come and work for like, for vegetables, sick. Like, I know that we want to do something different. It's a little hard to like cultivate the land when we I don't know, my dad's just getting older.
But there's something beautiful about like good healthy vegetables coming from you know, good healthy dirt and soil.
Exactly.
And going to the people. That's the thing, like when people are like, oh, there's socialism and stuff, they don't know what they're talking about, in the sense that you know, they're thinking communism, authoritarianism. What I'm thinking is like communalism.
Yeah.
Right? You're sitting there like every little town.
Yeah.
In this area, like that's how they were living. It's community living.
They take care of each other.
Right. And you have like a collective of wealth.
And that's what we're called to do. And so, you know, when I shifted my focus from like, oh, I need to make money to I'm going to be the best community member I can be, well, the community's taking care of me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyways, you're going back to stereotypes about somebody who lives on the farm.
Right.
My dad, kind of an organic farmer, but but also a working man at Micron for like 40 years.
Okay.
My mom was a stay-at-home mom. So how did I get this identity? Well, I had really great parents who just... I was always kind of a force of nature. I had what I describe as like a mane, like a lion's mane when I was a kid. Like my hair was like really big and curly. And I was always like covered in dirt and bruises because I was just a rough kid. Like I was one That's of great. Those. Yeah, I was one of those. I lived so fully, and I still do. I still do. But, you know, growing up on the farm, my parents were like, go outside, go outside. And then when they saw that I liked art, I got an art set. I was always like a drawer, and I would draw really funky stuff.
Right.
And I can remember my first time doing anything different was we were doing these like little alphabet puppets in preschool. And when it got to Z, everybody painted or everybody colored the zebra like black and white. And right. I colored my zebra rainbow. So all the stripes were rainbow. And I knew the order of the rainbow when I was like 4.
Right.
Like I knew all that. But it's, and my, even my preschool teacher, she encouraged it. She encouraged it so much. And then I got a paint set for Christmas that year. And I went up into my room and I painted every single piece of paper and used all of the paint. And so my parents were like, okay, she likes art. So, and then when I get punished, when I was older, my parents would take away my art supplies, not TV, not computer, not
home. My canvas.
Yeah. And like, my parents would literally be like, no art for yeah. And I was like, who gets punished like that?
Right.
But I mean, so that's kind of like, in terms of the art thing, I had every single person in my life or in my family encourage that. And then
I love that
I had a very, my grandma is a very strong woman. And she lost her first husband when my mom was 9.
Oh.
You know, so it was like she kind of, and then her second husband was sick most of their, and that's a whole nother history thing we could go.
Right.
Because he got sick because he was stationed at the base where they were doing, they were testing atom bombs.
Oh, you mean out in Arco area?
Yeah. So he, not, no, 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 no. This is down in like, I don't remember. It wasn't in Idaho.
Okay.
Los
Alamos?
Something like that. It's just one of his bases was like the radiation station. So like everybody who died, like everyone died of like millions of different sub cancers,
right?
Because of radiation poisoning. So, anyways, so he was sick most, like, I want to say like most of our marriage, and the entire time I knew him, he had cancer,
right?
Or kidney failure or whatever. And so, and she was like a head nurse. She's also like the matriarch. She is, the oldest, sister of 14 brothers and sisters.
Jeez.
And a lot of them
you're basically a parent.
Yeah, a lot of them have died at this point, but you know, there was that. And then my parents did have like significantly younger, my parents had 2 sets of kids. My parents have been together forever, but they had they decided when I was like a tween, they're like, you know what, let's have more children. So they had, I have a brother and a sister, and my brother's 11 years younger than me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's
kind of like a,
yeah, I'm kind of like a mom.
Right, right.
I got like mom energy, and I always tell people, I'm like, oh, well, that's why I was never in a hurry to like settle down and have kids, because I already have them. I've been raising them.
Yeah.
I mean, and my little sister will be graduating from high school this year.
That's old school stuff.
Yeah.
Good for her. Okay. High school.
Isn't that crazy?
Where's she going? She's going to go to college or, you know?
I don't know yet. We'll see. I mean, she got in, she got a scholarship through like the state of Idaho as like this new like jumpstart scholarship program thing, and she got that, so we'll kind of see where she goes.
Well, I guess that's an exciting journey she's about to start. Well, I mean, wow, you're describing,
like, there's so many more things of like how I got to be the way that I am.
But okay, so like one thing I'm seeing is this trend that I've seen, you know, these applications that especially like definitely in upper middle class to wealthy societies in America, you have this history of like the fragile woman, you know, but some of the strongest people I've known overseas and here, you know, you have women working on the farm until they're like the day before they have a child or the day they have a child. You have these women whose husbands die and they have to figure out how to raise their family without the main breadwinner.
Yeah.
Right. Now the old adage is, oh, well, they turn to prostitution. It's like, well, that unfortunately sometimes did happen, but that's strength too.
Yeah, I was like, sex work is work.
Right, right, exactly. Like that is, like there, I see strength, it's something that we vilify, and one of the themes on my walking tour when I go down this one kind of alley is, you know, these women were super beneficial to the development, and they were preyed upon by wealthy landowners, you know, and...
Oof. Going through the genealogy, my dad doing all this.
Right.
Come to find out, a lot of the women in my family who were brought over from other places were, like, brought in to be, like, maids, and then they married or they didn't marry, or they had, like, seven kids with this guy who never married this. And this is, like, in the 1800s.
Right.
Like, and I'm like, it's gross because, like, I'm like, that's like part of my, and I was telling my dad, I was like, that's like part of our history.
Well, yeah, but.
That's like some generational trauma shit that I have to work through because it ends with.
But there's society in that, like, looking at, like, the woman as, you know, the person that's acting abhorrent, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But, you know, really it's like.
But I mean, if you're 14 years old and you get pregnant by the man who's your boss.
Yeah.
And you were brought in to take care of his children, his wife died. That doesn't quite.
For your Thomas Jefferson.
For your Thomas Jefferson.
Sprinkle a little race complicity on there.
Stop. Right. My God. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the thing, like, history, like, what most Americans feel or want to be history is memory.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Thomas Jefferson's a complicated guy. And he definitely knew where he thought society should be heading, but at the same time, he didn't think, you know, black people were ready for freedom in America or anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, this is something, that's something Lincoln felt too, though.
Yeah.
You know, Lincoln was like, well, they're not going to be equal to white people, but, you know, I don't even know if they should.
But whatever.
Right. And then, like, you know, but the way we look at history with pertaining to women that were in that situation is it's like, oh, like, that's something wrong with them. And it's like, you know, like, wait, what about that guy? He's preying upon somebody that's in a weakened situation.
Well, it,
you know, it's coercive.
Well, you know, and it's funny because I get all the time, I'm one of those, because I'm single, I'm 32, I've never been married, never had children, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And I get regularly, how is it that you're single, Megan? Out of every, how is no one single?
Is that a choice? What?
And I go, and all that stuff. And I go, well, yeah, kind of. But, like, also, I am this really strong woman and this really strong personality. And something that I'm working really hard on is, like, meeting people where they're at, but also setting boundaries. Because I know what I'm worth. I know what I bring to the table.
Right.
And I haven't really met anybody who can match that.
That's great.
And as being like a, and I think more women need to not settle.
Right. I mean, why tie yourself to somebody that's not, you know, not going to make you have a happy life?
And that, and like, I've come to find that there's a lot of men will even be like, oh, I love that you're X, Y, and C, or that you're like this and whatever, or that you're independent. But then that's like the thing that they can't stand about me later.
Really?
I've had a guy, like, come into my life, like, he was a long time ago. He's like, I love how independent you've become and, like, how strong you are. And then he'd be like, I hate it that you bob up X, Y, and Z about stuff about me being independent. And I go, I feel like I can't win. And it's, like, the only time I can, like, get into a relationship is if I dull myself down. And I don't want to dull myself down. And I've been told that I'm a lot. And I'm like, if you think I'm a lot, go find less. Just say that you're not man enough to handle a woman like me. I
can't admit it.
I was like, I'm not the problem here. Because I know that I'm a good person and I really like myself. And it took me years of fight. Growing up in the early 2000s when it was like Paris Hilton, like, what, sex tapes galore. None of that is bad. But I'm saying, like, I had to really fight to be, like, okay with who I am.
Yes.
And I hated myself for a really long time.
And that's where your strength comes from.
Yeah. And I had to be like, no, I'm not going to. And my mom is one of the greatest people in the entire world. And it was only just recently that she was able to overcome like this lifelong like eating disorder, essentially,
okay,
of like, and not liking who she was. And I'm now getting to witness my mom in her 60s blossom into like this beautiful, vibrant woman.
That is beautiful. That's
wonderful. It's so beautiful. And being able to like look at her and be so proud of her, because growing up, she did not like herself.
Right.
And I had to watch the woman that I thought was perfect not like who she was and constantly tear down herself, or, you know, point out the cellulite on her legs and stuff like that. So growing up, I carried that with me.
And that's coming from what we were talking about.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not going to just say all her
But it's like one of those things. And it's like, and it's funny because my mom looks at me now and she goes, you know, I get to watch my dreams come true through you.
That's great.
It's beautiful because yes. my mom was super into fashion, but she never actually pursued it. And here I am, like,
right.
I do merch and I resell vintage clothing and I'm working on my own clothing line. And so she's getting to like, and she gets to be a part of it too, because she wants to be, and because I want her to be, because I need the help.
Right. And you know, I see a lot of comparison in your parents' celebration of who you are in my parents. You know, I'm a white 43-year-old guy, but my parents love that I'm doing something quirky or unique. You know, and they had a couple of square, you know, government jobs. You know, my father a teacher, my mother worked for, one of the best things that happened to me was work in the Seattle Parks Department with special needs kids and adults, and she did that. But they had government jobs, salaries and benefits, but that allowed me to become who I am. And my wife, you know, Michaela, she's had to go through her own stuff. Right now as a parent, you know, she's trying to not be just gobbled up by motherhood.
Yeah.
Right. And when you have an eccentric husband that does, you know, how do you classify what the fuck I do? You know, in a podcast, he does murder tours in a weird old van. Historian too. Yeah, thank you.
Historian. Just tell people you're an artist and then no one will ever question how quirky you are.
I'm an artist.
I'm an artist.
But she is a tremendous reader. She knows a lot about, you know, social consciousness and, you know, she's a social worker that, you know, has to be told that she has to, like, for her, I guess, her forensic reports, they call it, she does some private stuff. She always having be told that, no, you need to increase your wages because you're not making enough, you know, for what you're doing. And she's work and motherhood. And she's like, where am I in all this? Like, it's like a continual process to try and find. And she's like, I want to feel like a woman and not like a person that, you know, yes, I had kids and that's part of it, but they're latched to me.
Yeah.
You know, and they like me because I'm funny dad. I do, you know, eccentric things. It's always a weird joke or whatever.
You're a character.
I'm a character, but when they want security, they go to mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's wonderful in a sense, but it's also, you know, it's a lot of responsibility.
Well, but even like the fact that you recognize that that's happening, that's huge.
Well,
that means you're going to like help her through that.
I do. I mean, the fact that we're independent people, and I think we celebrate our independence, but we come together and we support each other. Like, we're the right people for us.
That's
but
goals.
I can't, right. And I have to constantly be open and understand that I can only, you know, love her. I can't define who she needs to be or who I want her to be. There are things that are present that I love about her that no matter, if you love somebody, that freedom comes for them to be who they are, that freedom for them to explore who they are. It's just there.
Yeah. Well, and that's real love.
Right. And that's like for you talking about the men you've been in relationships with, you know, if they don't offer that, and it develops too, but if you can't sense that, then it's not worth the time.
Well, and it's like everybody wants a strong, independent woman until they have a strong independent woman.
But like I say, I say on my tour when I'm joking, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm the purest feminist there is. You know, I'm a 43-year-old white guy that likes security and, you know, a nice paycheck. So economically speaking, I love that my wife's a strong, hardworking, independent woman that makes way more money than I do.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, it's such a, it, if you think about society as like, you know, just economic output.
Yeah.
And this is what I don't understand about patriarchal societies or, you know, you have patriarchy in Idaho, strong patriarchy. But it's like, if your wife is working and you're working, it's good for the economy. It's good for the state. It's good for your home.
Yeah.
It's like, it's good for your kids to see that. Like, you know, it's like, it's a win-win all around, you know, like, I don't know. So I think my wife represents that. And so, you know, I am a smarter person and more in tune with, you know, at least, you know, I think with a respect for women that I have because I'm married to a strong woman.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, it's crazy, like trying to, cause you know, I'm an artist and I do a bunch of different things in order to like make money. And I think that sometimes I don't get taken seriously because of the way I look a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I don't get taken seriously because I'm an artist. And a lot of people think that, oh, that's cute, but what do you do? And I go, no, I'm like a full-time creative. Like my money comes from being a creative individual.
I take you seriously.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate
of how you
that.
Look and how you, you know, we all put on armor when we go out with our personas, but like that's a part of us. It's like your persona is kind of like who you're projecting, but there's a lot of reality of like that's who you are trying to be.
See, and I think there's been so much of my just because I have like significantly younger siblings and my dad got sick. And so when I was, you know, in these formative years,
right,
I felt really misunderstood and I've carried that with me and I'm working really hard now to like let people in. And you're talking about that, like with my art and everything like that. Like if I want to be understood, I have to let people understand me.
Right.
Like, I have to let people in and I have to, cause I am authentic in so many aspects of my life, but I think there's still a lot of things that I don't share about myself
right.
that I keep really close to my chest, but I'm like, I need to let that out. I need people to know who I am fully instead of just like letting them assume that I'm like this busybody, hot artist.
Right.
which is a part of me. It's
right.
a part of me for sure. But it's like, I also like really love just being at home and reading. I turn my phones off I have two phones. And I shut them off for days at a time. Like my screen time is only like maybe 2 hours a day.
Right.
Like I live on a farm.
Like, right.
Come out to my farm and come see who I really am.
It's all in there. I mean, Idaho, America, mm-hmm. you know, stereotypes, defying stereotypes, being their authentic self it's hard for me.
Yeah.
It's hard for me, you know, and I'm the majority. I'm like what people think is the
kind of you're kind of the majority. I mean, you're rough around the edges. Like I wouldn't say that you're like the stereotypical Idaho person.
I tried to be the stereotype for such a long time, and it wasn't me. The clothes didn't fit
exactly. And there's it's funny because you can go out places and you can look around and be like this place is very Idaho. We're very Boise. Like we kind of have our own style and you don't realize it until you're all in one place and you're looking around and you're like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I kind of get it. And it is very, it's very interesting when you know that you like don't fit into that
mm-hmm.
and being okay with not fitting into that. But when society and like, you know, everything we're told, this is it. This is what you're supposed to want. This is what you're supposed to be. And when you're kind of on the outside of that, you're kind of like, is it though? Because I'm doing great and I'm happy.
Well, I see you, you know, I conclude my part in saying that I see you, I see what you're doing. You tell me about, you know, to the extent that you can in like an hour and a half, you tell me, you know, about your journey. And I think strength comes through facing adversity, both within ourselves, what we're challenged with, outside of ourselves and our farm.
Yeah.
You know, and then like that all blends together. But you know, in perseverance and then in expressing that through your art and being a strong woman, born in 1992. I love that. Like shit, I like man, it was like when a year after Nevermind by Nirvana came out. But, you know, like I see things of reflections of what I would like for my daughter, not like she has to paint like you or, you know, whatever. But I just want her to have that creative outlet and kind of, I guess, courage to put herself forth in a place that is really grappling with authoritarian identity, what is expected. Like, I mean, that woman saw your art and got emotional for a reason. Like, that's a good thing. And I think it's more important now than ever. You know, we all are like, I think this place that I feel very comfortable in talking, the Lit Room, or like Flying M downtown.
That's like, that's my other third place.
Right. I love that place. It's where I've done a lot of creative writing. And just for me, those are places where you meet artists, you meet people who are trying to be their authentic selves, oftentimes in the face of great, you know, discrimination, you know, and, you know, it's time to be yourselves. It's time to speak up against people who are trying to, whether saying that this is what a woman should be, or, you know, if you're a trans person, that's a problem. I don't agree with that. And there's something wrong with that. It's like, no, the problem's on you. Read a fucking book. Go look at some art.
Live and let live.
Live and let live.
Why is it like my existence doesn't take away from yours?
Exactly. But theirs does from you.
Yeah.
Because they're placing expectations.
Exactly. And that's a whole nother thing that we should probably sit down and talk about.
Right. Right.
Like,
I mean,
get like a panel full of like women with different lived experiences and of different backgrounds and have that conversation.
Right. I feel like you get a couple of creative people together or involved people or just activists or whatever. You get all those people in a room. And you're going to have all these different ideas, what is called like string theory, right? You know, you break a chord and then all these like strings shoot off in all these different directions. And that's how it is with creatives. I think, you know, this podcast that I'm doing, it's an extension of something that, like I said, Natalie and Shane of the Boise Bubble inspired me to do, just because they're really good individuals that stand up for others. But then I met all these other people, and this is my way to just push the ball forward, meet other people that are also doing other things, and then I will interact with them, and then they'll interact with others. And I mean, that's the only way to combat hate.
We're building community.
We're building community. But that's my last 2 cents before I sign off, unless you have some like huge profound thing to say that we didn't tap into.
I think if I can have like a last little be who you are,
right?
You live a life that doesn't hurt other people, that doesn't hurt yourself, and that maybe makes other people breathe a little bit easier.
Right, that's Idaho right there.
I was like, and that's all I want for me and for everyone else. I want to live an existence that, you know, doesn't harm others.
Right. I'd say that's one of my only expectations, is that you're not out to harm others.
Exactly. And I also just think, and also life is really messy and full of bullshit, but it's also really, really, really beautiful.
True. True that.
And that's it.
I can't beat that. Tune in next week, folks. I'm going to be talking to somebody. I'm not sure who that is yet, but
I got a whole list.
You got a whole list? Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thanks for listening. And thank you, Megan, the Naked Neighbor, for being willing to be on my little podcast.
And if you want to check out my art.
Oh, yes, yes. Please.
I'm the Naked Neighbor on Instagram. I'm pretty much the Naked Neighbor everywhere. You do have to type it in fully because I am a little bit shadow banned. So just the Naked Neighbor, no spaces.
Can people buy your art?
Yeah. My art is for sale. I'm working on building a website. And then if you want to check out my merch collective or cooperative, it's hood.coop on Instagram, hoodcoop. And then Neighborhood Merch is the name of the actual like business. And yeah, and then I am connected with Mastery Arts out in Garden. I'm gonna shout out a few people.
Man, you're connected.
Mastery Arts out in Garden City. They're a little recording studio that I do work with. then Shop Folks is down off of Main Street. I'm going to be working out of there. And then Flying M is my other home.
Right. Love
later,
Flying M.
Yeah. Later today, I'm meeting with Jay O'Leary. And he is the new, he runs Free Galley, and I'm going to be part of his board. So that'll be really cool. And that's everything. Those are my shout outs. Thanks, Chelsea, for letting us use the Lit Room.
Thanks, Chelsea. Love you. Yeah, very good. All right. This is a wrap, folks.
Bye.
Bye.